Time to ask the pharmacist. Our resident pharmacist is here. Hello.
Hello, Simon.
I thought that you were Rudolph when you came in.
It was cold outside.
We've got lots to get through today, and I think we will just get straight on with it. Because we're coming up to the holiday times, aren't we? So what's your advice about repeat prescriptions then over that period?
Yeah, with doctor's surgeries probably being closed up to 8 days over the holiday period, the surgery staff will mainly be dealing with acute problems where you may need to see a doctor rather than a repeat prescription service. I've noticed that many of my patients will run out of their regular medication in the middle of the holiday period, so I'm urging them to order earlier.
You're actually open though, aren't you, Christmas and New Year?
Yeah, my own pharmacy in Glasgow will be open for 3 hours on both days, and this is advertised both on the website, but also in a booklet. Your own area, wherever you live, will certainly advertise which pharmacies are open.
What if you actually do run out, though, of medicine at that point?
There are different schemes, Simon, in pharmacies across the UK. I mean, some pharmacists may be able to give you an emergency supply with no cost. But because many pharmacies will be open the days that doctor's surgeries are closed, for example, Saturdays, the first port of call will obviously be your own pharmacy. There are also helplines, NHS Direct in England, NHS 24 in Scotland, and you dial 111 for that. Often, if it's about medication or a minor illness, you'll be directed anyway to a pharmacy that is open, and there you'll be able to speak to the professional, the pharmacist.
Right, now onto something completely different. You were telling me about some companies that are trying to develop a glucose testing thing where you don't actually have to prick the skin, which would be great news, wouldn't it, for diabetics?
Yeah. Well, it's called non-invasive testing, Simon, for blood glucose for diabetics. Approximately 4 million people in the UK have diabetes, and about 10% have type 1. And these are the people that frequently have to test their blood, maybe up to 8 times a day. You can imagine it's not very pleasant stabbing a finger to get blood with all the problems that that can bring. Even the fact that it's just not suitable sometimes. Say you're on a social occasion, you're about to eat with company. It's really not practical. There's something called interstitial fluid testing, and that's measuring the fluid that surrounds the cell for glucose. But because there's a bit of a delay, it's not suitable for diabetics where there's a rapid rise or fall of glucose. Now, these devices are available, and they're inserted in the skin and remain for a number of days. But there's a device called Sugar Beet, which could be available at the end of 2017 or
ironic,
into 2018. Yes, it's a good name, isn't it? It's a patch which is placed on the arm, but you still have to do, at the moment, one finger prick test in 1 day. But for the next prototype, the company is trying to develop a patch that doesn't require calibrating with blood. I think people are now quite used to wearing devices top of the skin, and because Sugar Beet doesn't seem to have the same problems with skin irritation as the earlier models, I think they'll see new models on the market soon, and hopefully they'll be able to be given to diabetics who need to check their blood glucose regularly. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's also that sensitivity loss as well, isn't there, of diabetics sometimes after a while on the fingers, so it's really would be great to have a test like that.
Yeah.
Now, this is a pet subject of yours, I know, but you were telling me about there's a couple of new research projects concerning vitamin D.
Yeah, the first one is suggesting that babies who are breastfed should be given 400 international units or 10 micrograms of vitamin D from birth. And it was a Canadian study published in the American Journal of Public Health, and they looked at over 2,500 children from Toronto. They found that babies that were breastfed up to 36 months were more likely to develop vitamin D deficiency. And the babies that were breastfed for longer were, again, not getting enough vitamin D from other food sources. One of the symptoms of vitamin D deficiency is fatigue or impaired immune function, both of which are important in a growing baby. And severe cases, of course, can affect bones. The other research I was talking about suggested that vitamin D could help prevent rheumatoid arthritis. Now, this was a University of Birmingham study, and one of the problems when you have the condition is that the cells become insensitive to vitamin D. That means that much higher doses need to be used. Or one of the researchers suggested that they need new treatment that bypasses and perhaps corrects the vitamin D insensitivity in the immune cells. Because what happens in rheumatoid arthritis is it's an autoimmune disease. Now, basically, that means that the body attacks its own cells, and that causes inflammation. People with rheumatoid arthritis have swollen, sore joints. Vitamin D is a potent modulator of the immune system and can suppress that inflammation. The other important point is that most people with rheumatoid arthritis, when they're first diagnosed, they're actually found to be deficient in vitamin D, which is interesting. Every week there's something, some researcher findings that suggest vitamin D is both beneficial, but also the fact that those living in the UK, and particularly in Scotland, the further north you come, will be deficient. Everyone, Simon, should be taking at least 10 micrograms or 400 international units vitamin D daily. And that was recommended by the UK government.
And obviously at this time of year as well, the lack of sunshine and strong sunshine as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that people sometimes say, well, it's a lovely sunny day, I'll go out and get my vitamin D, but you can't actually get it in winter because of the height of the sun in the sky. You know, the level is not going to be enough to give you vitamin D in the skin. So really, you need it through the winter.
All right. Now, something else that surprised me is a story that 3 cups of coffee a day may have health benefits. We're usually hearing that coffee's actually bad for us, aren't we?
If you take too much caffeine, then it stimulates the cardiovascular system. And if you have a weak heart, it could, in extreme cases, trigger a heart attack. I was once involved in a radio program about diet pills that contained caffeine. There'd just been a report that someone had, in fact, had a heart attack from taking far too many. And that's the key to the harm-benefit argument. But in this study, researchers were from the University of Southampton in Edinburgh, and it was based on liver disease research. They wanted to check whether coffee had a beneficial or harmful effect. The results showed that high coffee consumption had beneficial effects in 19 health outcomes and harmful effects in 6 of them. The beneficial outcomes had the strongest links with liver disease, liver cancer, gout, death from heart attack and leukemia. And the lung cancer benefited only those in smokers. Harmful effects seemed to be linked to pregnancy, leukemia in childhood, where the mother had consumed large amounts of coffee. And obviously in pregnancy, miscarriage, low birth weight, fractures for women, another problem with too much caffeine. I think it's important to point out at this stage that the type of studies included in the research didn't prove that coffee improved health. One of the newspapers suggested that people should start drinking coffee for health benefits, but the studies couldn't actually say that from the studies. Certainly, coffee in pregnancy could cause some problems to mother and baby. The advice is to limit the amount of coffee during pregnancy to, say, 2 cups per day. The rest of us, I think, let's enjoy our coffee, 2 to 3 cups a day, just for the pleasure of it. Maybe in some cases it might be good for health, but that's not been proved conclusively in this research.
Yeah, the thing that confuses me is real coffee and instant coffee, because I'm not sure whether they're talking about pure coffee beans or whether they're talking about just coffee generally. That's the thing for me I find confusing.
Well, I think any study should be looking at proper coffee, which is the beans, yeah.
Now, brain training computer games. Now, they can reduce the risk of dementia by almost a third. Is this true?
Like many of the reports of research, it doesn't actually prove that this is the case. But researchers were from the United States, and they studied about 3,000 people over 65, and at the time, they didn't have any memory problems, or certainly at the beginning of the study. There were computer-based memory training games, as well as a control group. Now, they were taken out of the whole system. They didn't perform the parts of the training. The training programs were for memory, reasoning, speed. It was over a 6-week period and each person had 10 sessions. They then followed them up to see who had gone on to have dementia. The results after 10 years found that about 1 in 5 people had dementia. And really the people who had done the memory or reasoning training were no more or less likely to have dementia than the control group. So carry on whether it's puzzles and all of these things. That's fine, but I think one of the research projects that I talked about recently, people who think they are lonely or experience that loneliness, they seem to go on to develop dementia more than people who don't. So I think that's something to think about rather than let's have games, but please keep your mind active.
There's also a story we discovered earlier today come out that they reckon that married people have less chance of having dementia than people on their own.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. That was a research project. And
I'm doomed.
I think, well, also, I think women who marry live less than women who don't marry, and the other way around. Men who marry live longer than men who remain single. So I think there's something in all of that.
Don't tell me anymore. Right, we'll move on to this one. This one interests me. Wine relaxes you, vodka gives you energy, and beer boosts your confidence. Sounds good.
Yeah, Public Health Wales and King's College London used an online questionnaire across 21 countries. There were 29,000 responses, and they used people aged 18 to 34 who drunk four types of alcohol we're talking about in the last 12 months. The types were beer, red and white wine, and spirits, although they didn't specify which spirit, whiskey, gin, etc. They were asked what type of emotion they experienced when drinking the alcohol. They found that the majority of people felt relaxed and tired with red wine. Women were more likely to feel any type of emotion apart from aggression, which seemed to be prevalent with men. And alcohol-dependent participants were six times more likely to say they felt aggression when drinking. Some of the emotions with the spirit drinks were they felt energised, confident, sexy, but some felt negative emotions, feeling ill, restless, and even tearful. One of the differences between spirits and wine could be attributed to the fact that spirits are generally not consumed with food. People felt more emotional with spirits. Also, if you're dancing or socialising, you'll feel more energised anyway than sitting on a sofa or maybe watching television. So what can we take from the study? It's perhaps just a start to look at why people drink alcohol, but it wasn't representative across all ages, for example. And it was found that people had both good and bad emotions from drinking alcohol. Maybe public health campaigns in the future could be using this research. Maybe drinking too much would be something that perhaps could be used in the messages. You know, what about the emotion we feel when we drink alcohol? What we do know is that a maximum of safe limit of alcohol is now 14 units per week for both men and women, and that's come down for men from 21. Now, that's equivalent to 6 pints of average-strength beer or 10 small glasses of low-strength wine. So really, Simon, you need to be thinking about this over your Christmas and holiday period.
So what do you mean? If you've got any questions on anything we've talked about, anything's kind of cropped into your head, then please do get in touch here on IB Connect Radio. We have a Contact Us tab. Or you can email radio@rnib.org.uk. Or you can get in touch with Elizabeth directly through her website, which is all the W's.
newlifepharmacy.co.uk.
And if you want to read more about vitamin D.
Yes, newlifehealthcare.co.uk.
Thanks very much, Elizabeth, for coming in. It's invaluable.
Thank you very much, Simon.